One thing I've noticed lately on TV, and I guess I could sort of notice it and notice it again, is how, well, first, how good a lot of the television is these days. Just very, very rich. From what I understand, the medium of television has become a writer's medium. The medium of film is a director's medium. That's what I get from a friend that I has that I has. And because I said that, I'll never work in the business. The friend that I have that's in the business, he described it like that. And I think that's true. I think it, you know, if you look at a show like True Detective, you know, that's one writer's vision. So there's almost like a novel quality. And I don't mean like new, fresh. I mean like a book-like, there's really a book-like quality, novel-like quality to a show like True Detective. The old standard two-dimensional character is kind of new, no more. You see a show like Breaking Bad, very complicated characters, and even though there's still gunfights and things like that, there's a lot of rich material that's pursued that's not standard, in terms of relationships, in terms of meaning and self-discovery, even dark self-discovery, especially maybe dark self-discovery. Well, it's something that's fairly consistent. It's almost a thoroughgoing position of all these great new shows is how dark they are. You know, from Game of Thrones to even Mad Men, I think, is a dark show. It's sort of a well-dressed dark show. I mean, I guess eventually it could turn out to be have some bizarre happy ending, but I don't think things are going to end too well for Don Draper. And if they do, it's going to be only in that Stepford Wives, picture perfect kind of way, where he's standing with his family, the bottom of a church step, posing for a photograph and trying to manufacture a smile. You know, that's the kind of place that show's going, which is a different kind of darkness than, you know, Game of Thrones or True Detective or Breaking Bad. There are a couple of exceptions, I suppose. British shows tend to be the opposite, which is a weird. I think the British culture is entering more mainstream. Sherlock, Downton Abbey, Doctor Who, almost becoming, you know, I think you could probably put any of their shows on regular TV, and I mean, by regular, I mean network, ABC and NBC, CBS, or whatever, HBO. And they would do perfectly fine. They're still confined to that PBS type zone. But the interesting contrast is those three big shows out of England have a kind of a kind of depth of heart, I would say. I know Sherlock can be about grim things and bad things can happen, but really it's about the part, the thing that people are attracted to is the warmth of it, I think. Doctor Who, same thing. It's sort of silly. You can't deny its element of silliness, but it's so built in, and so it's the suspension of disbelief part. Silliness is where you suspend. But it's very much based on the heroic model. You know, Doctor Who doesn't use guns. He's this lonely figure who almost requires human companionship. And then Downton Abbey, even though it is, you know, sort of a melodrama in one way, kind of crosses into the soap opera territory of things like Dallas or Dynasty. I mean, it has that tiny bit in it. and it also has sort of a an icing of romance and other things. But still, it's about you're drawn to it from not from the excitement of guns firing and criminals being en masse, but through rooting for characters to get along, get together, recover their relationship, build their relationship. So those three, you know, I would say I would put a big bright sun next to them, and the others, the sort of, you know, if you go back to it all, I think Sopranos is going to be one of those shows that we trace as the first, you know, the first one through the door that it went out there and did what it did, and everybody said, "Oh, I guess that works. We don't have to just be simple, and we don't have to just peddle a kind of low-grade virus to the people." But just such an amazing amount of darkness then poured forth. And I don't have a trouble with the dark shows. You know, I watch them. I've watched most of them. I haven't seen the end of Breaking Bad, but I will. But I guess I'm surprised that there haven't been more. There's not some balance in there, like in the same way that there are just so many CSIs out there. Where's the counterbalance to those? Is it just these British shows that come in? I don't know. Just something I've noticed. I did see a good, really good BBC show which mixes, interestingly enough, I think, both of those elements, dark and light. It's called Broadchurch. Stars David Tennant. I kind of, David Tennant, who was the 10th Doctor in Doctor Who. And after seeing him in Doctor Who, I thought, how can he do anything else? He's got to be this demonstrative, goofy, sort of lovely, but, you know, not, he wasn't overly complicated. Matt Smith added a level of dimension, I think. But he's remarkably quiet and still in Broadchurch. He plays this kind of struggling, sick detective who's just come off a really poor case and is not at the peak of his career or the peak of his life. He's not doing very well. And he goes to this little town and he has to sort of solve this murder. And one thing, his partner, I don't know her name, she wasn't anyone I know or knew, is just amazing, amazing actress. And together they're really lovely. But I would say, if you're looking for a new show, try Broadchurch. They're apparently making it into an American. It's called Grace Point, and David Tennant is going to be an American detective wherever. It's some, you know, seaside New York town or whatever they're going to do. And apparently it's going to be, they're using almost the same script. Maybe slightly altering the language, but it's going to sort of be a remake. Do I have any other television recommendations? I don't think so. Tried to watch Parenthood the other day. And that stars the guy from 6 Feet Under and the lady from Gilmore Girls. And it just was, yeah, it was good, but not that good. It's one of those shows, it's about family, you know, dysfunctional, and then they're all different, and you know, but it's one of those shows where every episode you imagine there's going to be a scene where the whole gang gets together around the dinner table and they all talk and some laugh, and then a big fight breaks out, and they all know each other's secrets and they all catch each other right in the middle of whatever act. And it's also one of those shows where like everybody goes to the little kid's baseball game, you know, like 30 people make a big deal out of this little kid's baseball game, and then they all go to the little girl singing in the school play. And we're supposed to cheer that a little bit, and I think they think that we long for that sense that numbers and families doing things in en masse like that, that means a kind of, that we yearn for that harmony. And it's just, it's a mistaken concept. They're missing the harmony that we're yearning for and putting this other thing in place and saying, this is what we think you want. Or, this is as close as we can get. And that's the difference, I think, between a good show and Parenthood, which is a good show, but it's just, it's got that manufactured American quality. I only saw one episode, so what do I know? I like Lauren Graham a lot. Gilmore Girls. She's sort of like a more successful Jenna Elfman. That quirky lady. She's someone who really should be in one of these new dark shows, even a dark show. Because I think she's probably a pretty amazing actress. I mean, she is, but it's hard to say from, you know, Gilmore Girls or Parenthood. There's just not a lot to hang on. You know, you can be amazing and dazzling in those things. And Gilmore Girls is a lovely, you know, show. But it's a bit sweet. It's a bit like pancake breakfast with syrup all over it and bacon. You don't know if you just ate something that was so good it tasted good, but so you kind of put it out of your mind somewhat. I've read some books recently. I would highly recommend The Martian by Andy Weir. It's an amazing book. It started off as a self-published thing by this guy, American guy. I think he's a computer programmer. It's basically, if I'm to do the player-like mix, it's basically Castaway and Gravity, a little bit. The story is basically an astronaut visiting Mars with his team is believed dead, and his team has to depart, and he's left there stranded on Mars, and he's got a little bit of stuff around that he can MacGyver with, a little habitation unit that he can live in. And so it's all about his struggle to survive until they can get a craft back, possibly, to rescue him. But it's just, it's such a well-done thing. So smart. That's going to be a huge movie, I think, at some point. That's my movie guess from a book of the night. The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey. I read this maybe a month ago, so. Very easy book to read. Very readable, not compulsively readable, not a, you know, rip-roaring anything. It's a very small story, but it does its thing very well. It's almost like the author, I don't know, remember her name, just decided, almost like as a practice, before she moves on to something really amazing, like she's going to write this simple enough story and just do a good job and just see how she does, see how the process is. I know she's written some other, like, young adult books. I think this was her first kind of you know, whatever it would be called. It might be called literary fiction, but it's more just a, I don't know, regular old book. Dave Eggers, The Circle. It was almost a... I kept thinking about things like Animal Farm, Gulliver's Travels. It's not necessarily a satire, but it has that quality of warning. There's almost a political element or a social commentary element. It's about a young woman who gets hired at this company called The Circle, and The Circle is like Google meets Facebook meets Apple. And they're basically taking over the world and making everything social and making everything transparent. So government officials are agree to constantly be filmed, and people carry, you know, cameras around. And it's basically taking the idea of Facebook and Twitter and all these things, or the selfie culture, and pushing it to an extreme. A huge problem with it is the kind of unlikability of the main character, May. She just goes with it, you know. So all these terrible things, like she has 9 computer screens or something like that, and she has to spend almost all of her time liking other people's posts and posting on them and replying. It's just not believable. No one would agree to live that way. And she's just kind of this, she's just there to take us on this ride. And that makes the novel a little less pleasurable than it might be. Because it's kind of a single direction book, you know, without a turn. It just keeps opening up more and more in its kind of maneuver to show us where we could be heading. What else? I'm trying to read The Luminaries by Elizabeth Catton, or Caton, I don't know. I've only just started. Reminds me a little bit of David Mitchell. Like, terribly gifted writer, almost like violently gifted in some ways. But you have trouble falling into the story. Something, you know, it's one of those books that at the beginning, like all these weird... Like when I was a kid, if I opened up a book and it had a really complicated map at the front, like the Tolkien books, I would put it away. Because I would feel like, if I'm going to read this book, I'm going to study this map before. I got to know all these places. I have to know this world. And I'm not cartographically inclined. I can't even... You know, I just can't read regular maps. So that was a big, you know, when I was a kid, big map, I can't do it unless it's just got like one, you know, location on it, like Mordor and nothing else. But at the beginning of The Luminaries, there's kind of a cast list and associated astrological signs of these characters. And... That doesn't invite me. You know, I can't slow down enough for that, I think. And then skipping over it or not paying enough attention or not considering what this could possibly mean, that this fellow is, you know, born under the sign of Leo, and that mean, you know, I feel like I'm missing something if I'm not studying it. But anyway, I push on from that. I just didn't even read it. Because I want to see what it's all about, because it's a Booker Prize winner. And a lot of times I like the Booker Prize more than I like other prize-winning books. Like, I rarely like National Book Award winners. I don't know what it is about them. They just aren't my kind of thing. They don't... You know, they're amazingly competent, but the thing that the purpose of them has nothing to do with what I want in a book. Pulitzer Prize too, I never quite. Nobel as well. I just I try, but it's like these books are, they pick them because they're serving some kind of purpose in the world, or I don't know. You know, in the same way that Hollywood's Oscar winners, you know, best movie, they're serving some other agenda, you know, that, you know, Matthew McConaughey is a great actor, but he's the best actor in the world, or is it just this Hollywood still, the story that it wants to tell itself and to us? And I'm totally fine with that, but it's kind of like the best Oscar movies, never really the best movie, even amongst the contenders. It's some kind of midline movie, like the least offensive in some way, or it has the most reward in some other way, like 12 Years a Slave, you know, get a little white guilt thing out. Books and movies. Books and movies. You watched part one of the new installment of 24 last night. Jack Bauer is back. He's in London. And he's gotten a lot older than he was the last time I saw him. I saw the first series of 24. And I kind of bailed after that. I thought it was pretty amazing. You know, conceptually, it's like a trailer that never ends. Yeah, it's just, I keep thinking, like, what? Am I going to get bored by all these car chases and these nuclear bombs that are going to kill the president? But, you know, I don't think I would. Just fall for it every time. But anyway, something stopped us from watching the rest of the 24s. It wasn't that we didn't like them, but I don't know. They were too nerve-wracking at the time, maybe. I think that was our reason, but I can't defend it right now. So we watched the first one. He's in London. He's older. His face seems skinnier and there's more lines in it. And he's the greatest. What is that thing called? That space? The septum? No, I don't know what it's called. Below the nose, above the lip. Kiefer Sutherland has the greatest. He's like 3 inches of space. A 3-inch kind of canyon descending from his nose to his upper lip. What is that called? I used to know. Throughout the whole episode, I just kept thinking, and I wanted to stop. It was almost like a problem. I kept thinking how old he looked. And he doesn't look 90 years old, but he's not that, like, 35-year-old guy that he was. You know, he's like a hard-living 44, and he kind of feels 50. Like, you could do a little bit of dress-up with him, and he'd be Donald Sutherland. They would be pretty close. I mean, they look the same anyway, but his dad has always looked like his dad. Now, Kiefer's starting to look like his brother. He's catching up. And that's even with all the President Snow white hair and white beard. One thing Donald Sutherland said once in an interview about his own acting style is that he always seeks to bring balance, like acting balance or human balance or some kind of balance to whatever he's involved with. So he doesn't, you know, somebody comes in and is talking a mile a minute, he doesn't join up with that. He goes the opposite direction. If there's animation, he's quiet. If there's quiet, he'll become animated. At least that's how I understood it. And I always thought, if I was ever an actor, that would be a primary tool that I would try to use. I don't know if I could use it, but I'd try to key in on that. Like something to hold on to. Oh, this is ridiculous. My son Sam, who's 9, really likes iCarly. So I just started watching it. We've been watching the first season together. You know, and this is also true of SpongeBob. I watch these shows, SpongeBob SquarePants and iCarly. And I laugh like... I'm so embarrassed. And I don't know if it's because Sam is laughing, yeah, he really likes these shows, but I think they're actually funny. And it's such a commodified TV viewing. It's like, you know, in my younger, more militant days, you know, I'd point at both of these shows as tragic examples of American pop culture. Now I'm just completely enjoying them, cheering them on. I look forward. This is terrible. I look forward. I have to whisper. I look forward to watching iCarly. And if SpongeBob's on, and Sam says, "Hey, Dad, will you watch this with me?" I will gladly. And I keep thinking to myself, these kinds of things like, well, you know, this show is actually a lot funnier than people give it credit for. I'm going to have to let people know that these shows are actually pretty good. How am I going to do that? Write a big essay in The Atlantic? SpongeBob Better Than We Thought, reads headline. iCarly, pretty good show, says person no one wants to be friends with anymore.
Come touch me like I'm an ordinary man. Have a look in my eyes. Underneath my skin there is a violence. It's got a gun in its hands. Ready to make sense of anyone, anything, anyone, anything, anyone, anything, anyone, anything, anyone, anything. Black holes living in the side of your face. Razor wire spinning around, you're around, you're around, you're around.
Blistering sky, blistering sky, blistering sky.
Bullets are the beauty of the blistering sky. Bullets are the beauty and I don't know why. Bullets are the beauty of the blistering sky. Bullets are the beauty and I don't know why. Personal responsibility. Personal responsibility. Personal responsibility. Personal responsibility.
Responsibility. personal responsibility, 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 personal responsibility.
Delivered from the hand of Aldrin.